Welcome to the Susan Winter Show. Here you'll find practical tips and tools to address your most pressing concerns on love, dating, and partnership. And now, here's your love and life mentor, Susan Winter.
Hello, everyone. Susan Winter here, continuing my interviews with dynamic professionals and experts in their field. I am so excited. Today, I have a buddy and a colleague. I have Ken, who's a counselor. Ken Reed has a massive Instagram following. You've got to make sure you check it out. He's a podcaster from Australia. He's also my colleague, my buddy, and he is the go-to source for everything attachment theory. And he helps people through their relationship challenges, including confrontation, which is hard for many of us, breakups, grief, communication, as well as being a solidifying source of information and support for the LGBTQIA plus community. And all of his credentials will be in the show notes. And today we are talking about blindsided breakups, the avoidance strategy, his exit strategy or her exit strategy. Ken, welcome to my show.
Thank you, Susan.
So I'm going to out myself right away with my audience. Those of you who've spoken to me privately or that I've worked with as a client, you know, I have thought that attachment theory is BS because of the way I see it overutilized. I see it as a, you know, thumbnail clickbait, just put the word avoidant on it and everybody's going to click, or that anybody who leaves a relationship, you know, because they're kind of disenchanted or it just wasn't working for them, is quickly identified as an avoidant to make the person who was left feel better, or that anybody who's asking for the minimum of attention and respect is labeled insecure attacher. So because I've seen this horrible proliferation, I assume that it's just beyond the adoption studies that they did in the beginning, because I'm adopted. I just thought it was just nonsense. But I have to admit to all of you, my audience, you are seeing for the first time ever me talking about attachment theory, because I will be the first to let you know when I have updated my programming. This is why I have Ken, a loving and helpful source who has helped me to realize from our first conversations that the behaviors that I was identifying in hot and cold are in essence the avoidant. Is that correct, Ken?
That's pretty much it. So that's pretty much what it is. And I mean, before we jumped on, the funny thing is, this is like a very full circle moment for me, because I first came to you, Susan, because I had just been blindsided by someone who I later then realized, oh, this person absolutely had avoidant attachment. And even though you didn't use that language, the way you describe that, you know, very irrational behavior in dating was so helpful and instrumental in helping me get out of the situation that involved, as you call it, the avoidant exit strategy.
See, so now that I know what I didn't know, and for all of you, listen, when you have counselors, it's really important that they update their info. Imagine you've got a closed source. This is what I believe in. There's nothing else. You don't allow for any new input. So I'm so happy to have you give me the terms and names for what we've been talking about that I didn't know I was talking about. So I want to ask you about this whole, okay, like, you're going to be my source because you are the go-to source. I absolutely love this. And I've got so many interesting things to talk about. So there are so many different types of the avoidant personality that I'm seeing out there, from fearful to dismissive. Can you give me a brief overview as to how these different types present when you see them?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start from the basics of avoidant attachment. At its core, and this is me being very reductive for the lay audience, avoidant attachment is what we call a conscious fear of intimacy, connection and commitment, closeness and vulnerability. And it's not just a case of they have a fear of commitment, because it has to involve a level of connection with the commitment for it to be scary. And they also have a subconscious fear of abandonment. So what does this mean when we look at dating? Basically, this is the person who, you know, may say to you in the beginning, oh my God, I absolutely want a relationship. I really like you. This is amazing. This is great. And you go out dating and you're like, oh my God, this person sounds and feels incredible. I feel like I've met the one, soulmate. And then we've talked about this before, Susan, way back when, you just feel that they're slowly backing away just as things have started to get really good. Let's say you've just gone on an amazing holiday together,
yes,
where
yes,
it was like 10 out of 10, and then all of a sudden you notice that they're spending more time and work. You ask them, hey, how's everything going? And they're like, oh, I'm fine. You may even call them out on this and say, I've noticed there's a shift in the energy. Do you want to share with me what's going on? Again, they might say, oh, no, it's nothing. I'm fine. And then what we usually expect to see is there'll be a slow fade. There might even be outright ghosting, but there is an abrupt usual end to this growing intimacy with a couple. And I should make this very clear. This experience is where an avoidant attacher, a seemingly amazing human being who seems so interested, you know, is in a relationship or situationship with someone where there are genuine feelings for the other person. And this is the stuff that people have been writing tons of books on, like, oh, they're just not that into you. If they wanted to, they would. Couldn't be further from the truth. They absolutely do want you, but in love, fear rules the heart, and these people are very, very scared to get close to another human being because a lot of them have come from backgrounds where they may have had a lot of overbearing parents, they've been enmeshed as kids. They're people where if they were really able to allow themselves to be vulnerable and close, they have this tremendous feeling of low self-worth where they might feel like, oh my God, I'm just not going to be able to meet this person's needs. And you'll hear things like, and I'm sure you've heard plenty of this before, they'll say things to you like, yeah, I just don't know if I can give you what you're looking for.
Right.
I can't, you know, I just don't know if I can meet your needs, even though they've been doing that up until that point.
They're better.
Yeah, they may say things like, you can do so much better than me, you know, you deserve the best, and I'm just not that kind of person right now. Well, they may say things like, you know, oh, I love you, but I don't love you. I love you like a friend, but not as like a romantic partner, even though we've been doing all this romantic stuff throughout this entire relationship. Or you'll get some of my favorite rationalizations that I always roll my eyes at, where you'll hear them say things like, you know, you like mountain hiking, but I like mountain biking. Clearly, we're not going to move at the same speed. So it just means we're incompatible and we're not going to be able to make it work. And they have a very high, they're very sensitive to conflict over like silly little things. So you could be discussing like, where do you want to go out for dinner? And you might be debating about where you want to go. And then all of a sudden, you know, the avoidant attacher might feel very sensitive over the idea of like not wanting to do the thing they want to do. Well, they might be very passive, but let's just say for the argument's sake that, you know, this comes into a disagreement. The avoidant attacher can lose faith in the relationship or situationship altogether and be like, well, I think that means we should just leave and we should just not make this work because clearly we don't get along very well with each other. So you asked what's the difference between the dismissive and the fearful and how that presents itself,
yes,
in people. Even though attachment styles are really an interpersonal, I don't want to call it a disorder because it's not really that, it's more of an interpersonal wounding, if you will. Unfortunately, emotional wounding does present itself in people's disposition, particularly in dating. So what this means is you've got the dismissive avoidant who I call them the James Bonds. You know, these are the people who look charming, cavalier, but they are like a crab, got very soft meat under the shell, and you can often feel it. You can often feel like they've got their walls up, and if you get too close, they're going to push you away because they have a very high sensitivity to closeness, connection, vulnerability, anything that feels disagreeable to them. So they usually prefer to have lots of distance and emotional space between you and them. As for the fearfuls, they are a much more intense. I gotta say, I always love my dates with the fearful avoidance because they bring a lot of intensity to the table. They're your love bombers. Frankly, they're the F boys, the F girls, the F people. They're the ones who are like,
oh, full really?
On. Oh yeah, they know how to charm people like 100% of the time. Like they're so engaging. They'll tell you a yarn, a great story, and then the danger is that often you'll think in the beginning, my God, this person's messaging me all the time. They're like, they seem really into me. In fact, they're telling me they want to get like, they want to be with me all the time. And you feel at first like, oh my God, I'm dating someone who's kind of coming across as a little bit needy, but whatever, we'll run with it. And then as intimacy continues to develop, a little bit like the dismissive, their behavior suddenly goes from being intense hot to intense push you the hell away from them. And so you'll notice this extreme jarring behavior where you once they were idolizing you and then all of a sudden they're like, I just don't want anything to do with you. And it can be really unsettling. And the fearfuls have more of a proclivity for boomeranging back and forth, meaning that, you know, you might find that they abruptly leave, come back 2 days, a week, a month, a year later into your life. And they might not have, and this is one thing we see across the severe cases of these individuals is they don't hold any accountability for a lot of their actions. This is going to happen for the dismissives too. But the point simply is that these individuals do have a tendency of coming back to relationships because they're much, much, much more scared of loss, abandonment, and not having someone close. And so they're the two presentations that we often see with avoidant attachment as a whole. Again, that's my little reductive summary of how this shows up.
God, I feel like we need a public service announcement. And I know we shouldn't look at these as bad. I mean, these are wounded individuals that have ended up here through no fault of their own. Okay, so, oh God. Firstly, as though it's any shred of something to hang on to, it is kind of nice. And I think people need to know that they wouldn't have run if they didn't feel something.
Correct. Correct.
That might be the only, because we tend to think in the mix of this, am I delusional? Did I make this up in my head? Right? Don't we think like, was I crazy? I felt it. I can't get there and avoid. I know I felt it. So we think we're nuts, but they were there for a second, right?
Yes. And you've done you did an amazing video on this while back where, in summary, you described it as, you know, this person showed up in the beginning and was all in. Hell, they even initiated that they were all in. Right. And then suddenly they're telling you, oh, I just can't do this anymore. I just need to go. And it's that wild cognitive dissonance where you're just like, how the hell were we at the peak of our relationship or situationship? And now all of a sudden it's like you're treating me like a stranger. Worse, maybe they blocked you. And you feel like you're such a terrible human being because you've been essentially, the term I like to use is erased or banished by this person, and made to feel like you never even existed.
Right, right. So it makes us doubt our own sanity. And I can't imagine how many people have been trying to figure out, well, that's why I did that little t-shirt. Well, I don't have it. This one's, this is for you today, Ken. You're so big and strong. But I did a merch line for our mutual friend, Barbara, and it's like, it's not me, it's you, because many of my clients were feeling, what did I do wrong? I did this and this. I lost him. I had him and I lost him, because the mind does not know how to wrap our head around, we had them. It felt real. Now they're not there. There's got to be a way for me to get this back.
Yes. 1,000,000,000%. And I think you would appreciate the fact that it's one of those things where I think you and I are quite similar in that I don't tend to run from love. Like, I'm the kind of guy to go closer to it and be like, if I've got it, I want to hold on to it because it feels right. These people are the complete opposite. And I have to always remind people, I'm like, listen, we need to stop projecting what we would do with these individuals because they operate with a very different wiring to us in love. And often these stereotypes are often attributed exclusively, particularly to straight men. It's sort of seen as this thing of like, oh, well, the men, you know, you've got to be very careful, tiptoe around them. Don't tell them you're emotional because that'll set them off. And it's like, no. What we've stereotyped are avoidantly attached individuals, because women can do this too, as well as non-binary folk. Like, you know, it's down, as you said, unfortunately, for the wounding of these people. And look, this is where I have to make a very big thing. I have to add to what you were saying before is these individuals are absolutely wounded. And, you know, I don't think it's neither good nor bad. It is what it is. But I always say, if they know what they're doing and they've done this before and they're not seeking help, we have entered the realm of abuse, and they do need to then do their public service act and get to therapy and work on this.
Okay, so I am talking about a sudden breakup, but I need to go over all of the sections before. So people interested in sudden breakup, don't stop watching. Is love bombing a tell from a possible avoidant?
Yes, and though we've often attributed love bombing to narcissists, they're not the only people who love bomb, because Love bombing from a narcissist can often feel calculated. It's very like saccharine and sweet. But there's something very genuine about avoidant love bombing where it feels like it's just a lot, but it's just enough that it feels nice. It feels lovely to, you know, experience. And you might get things like this person just saying to you things like, oh my God, I've just, you know, I love the conversation we have with each other. You know, I just don't think I've ever met someone quite like you. Or a kicker is, I have never felt as safe with someone like you as with any of my previous partners. You, and if their previous partners were a history of people who exhibited not the healthiest behavior, it can often be both a sign of they're dead serious about what they're saying, but just like a person who won $1 million, they may not be equipped to maintain the $1 million they just won.
Because it's so foreign, yes.
Correct, yeah.
And they may not have practice. So therefore, the sudden departure. Okay. Is there a too hot, too soon hallmark in the avoidance strategy?
Yes. So just to make sure I'm on the same page with you. As
like
in
a player's handbook. Like, do players tend to be avoidance?
They're like, yes, if we think that they're like the worst players in the world. Because when I think of players, I'm thinking of people who are slick, they're sophisticated, they're like...
charismatic. They
know
yeah.
Yeah. They know that they're going...
practiced. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, they know that they're going for, you know, one specific thing, and it's very, you know, directional, right? But when I think of avoidance being players, I sort of think, God, well, they're leaving a lot of corpses in their wake because they're not doing a good job of it. Like, to me, I think that, yes, they can be mistaken for players because it seems like they're just there for a short time and not for a long time. Like, they're not, because they're often, these are truly the emotionally unavailable people that we refer to. You know, it's often thought that, like, you know, these individuals just wanted, you know, maybe something better, like another option came around, or they're just, you know, they just weren't that into you. When it's like, no. A lot of this is their deep insecurities and their deep fears. And sometimes they will shut down and freak out after a great night, including sex. It wasn't because they just wanted the sex and they're out. It's that you guys got too close. Their nervous system couldn't handle it and they bounced and they were like running away.
Okay, really important question. Do these individuals know they're going to pull away? Do they know this in advance?
Often they do.
And they do it anyway.
Yeah, so I want to make it very clear. If they're a new time person to doing this, no. First time I'm gonna be like, no, you didn't know what you didn't know. Like, that's totally fine.
Okay.
But when we get into what I call the severe avoidant range, abso-fucking-lutely, excuse my French. Like,
no, but it's cruel. It's cruel.
It is.
I agree. I mean, if you know this is your pattern, that, because there's a difference between I'm held captive by my unconscious response, and then this seems to be something I've done in every relationship. Maybe I should be careful with this person that I like. You know, like, where's the accountability here?
Yeah, that's where we get to the severe range. So those that are in the mild or moderate will know a pattern and be like, I need to work on this because I can't keep doing this anymore. And they're ready to quit the avoidant lifestyle. And they're fabulous individuals. Which is not to say the severe end aren't fabulous. It's just that they have a lot of defensiveness around taking accountability. And so this is where we start to see this blend a little bit into narcissistic territory because they may, you know, project, gaslight, be stonewalling you, defending themselves, being like, no, you know, it's your problem that I'm feeling this way. I don't want to take any accountability for this. So, yes, to answer your question, they do know. You know, a lot of them absolutely do know what they're doing.
That's horrible, Ken. I mean, I just ethically, it's not ethical. they're playing naughty. I don't like that. They can't play in my sandbox. I don't like that. Okay. Oh, my God, this is so amazing. Now, can people switch back and forth between either being avoidant or being anxious within a lifetime?
Great question. The research and the evidence base would suggest that is possible, that you can go from like one attachment style to the other, that it's a flexible thing. My personal experience now, you don't have to take my word for gospel, but I was going to say, I think that some of this is down to a bit of nature. I think some of us lean a little bit one way more than the other. I don't think, for instance, I could ever become a dismissive avoidant without right. like being wired a bit that way. Because these individuals are more logic-centered and not so emotionally focused, whereas I am much more emotionally focused than I am logical in a lot of situations. And so I would say it's absolutely possible for people to have fears of abandonment and fears of intimacy, but how they play out and the severity of them, I think, depends on so many factors. And I think that if you're rooted in one major camp, whether that be fearful avoidant, dismissive avoidant, anxious attached, I think you can definitely have tendencies of each of the other attachment styles, but I think you're more likely to lean one way or the other, and you can move closer to the middle, which is where we ideally want people, which is that secure range.
So you tend to have a default. Okay. You had this really beautiful recent video that I caught, which I don't hear. You might be the first one I know that's spoken about it. Fearful avoidants who get discarded by avoidance. Wow. Because you always think it's the opposites that attract. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Of course. So the research would suggest that if you are someone with fears of abandonment, you're going to attract someone who has a fear of intimacy and vice versa. And that does seem to be the case. Like we, you know, are like moths to a flame. However, it would be a fallacy to say only anxiously attached people get with avoidance. And infamously, many, many fearfuls and dismissives can get with other avoidance. And it can be the catalyst to a whole awakening for a lot of them. You know, many fearful avoidants who also have that fear of abandonment can sometimes get with someone who has big fears of intimacy and they're running the show. They're very controlling with their partner. And this, unlike what would happen with an anxious attacher where, you know, I find a lot of anxiously attached people, and I'm sure you've seen this in your practice, they're almost like tiptoeing around the avoidant. They're trying to like, you know, walk on eggshells. Don't say anything that's going to set this person off. They might try and be the cool person for a while and not want to express their wants and needs. And we find that with the fearful avoidance, yeah, there can be a bit of that going on, but they can get hyperactivated into real fears of loss because their fear of abandonment is not quite the same as that of the anxious attacher. Anxious attacher is like a fear rejection. For a fearful, it's more, I fear losing this person from my life because I've already suffered loss, maybe divorce, maybe a death in the family. I don't want to go through that again. And so it can bring out a lot of that. And also because fearful avoidance is marked by the betrayal wound, which is this essentially this paranoia that you're about to be discarded, hurt by someone close to you, you're often feeling super, super triggered in these dynamics where you're with someone who's got big avoidant attachment, because that is like when you're in that relationship, if the other person's not working on their stuff, you know, you are in for a world of hurt because you're going to be re-traumatized again. You're also going to see yourself in this other person right. and how you might have behaved and with other people as well too. And in its own twisted way, whilst it can be absolutely devastating for these poor people, it can actually be the catalyst for some incredible healing where they're like, oh, wow, that was a mirror to who I've been throughout a lot of these experiences. And I now need to work on myself because I cannot let myself be in a situation like that or let myself do that to another human being.
Gosh. So, wow. The sudden breakups, that is the, oh my God, I feel too much. I have to evacuate. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
This seems to be every fourth email that I get out of five. And, you know, in the old days, when we didn't have so much of this presenting or we weren't so aware of it, or dating was a little bit more sticking to somebody and working that stuff out, and there wasn't this kind of churn, you know, we wouldn't have described it this way. We would have imagined that somebody who didn't see it coming was just put their head in the sand because they didn't want to. Because that's, yes. You know, it's like, I never knew he was going to leave me. I woke up one day and it was a sign on the kitchen table saying it's over. And I had no idea. You're thinking, oh, please, you weren't looking at the signs. But in dating, with the way it's doing like this now, right? It's happening all the time, Kent. I mean, this is, I think it's becoming normalized like ghosting, right?
Well, funnily enough, it's usually the avoidance to do the ghosting. So, you know.
We got a buffet table here of behaviors. Oh, my God. Start with bad behavior on this end. You got a whole table to go down. Oh, my Lord. No wonder people are terrified. And then if a person is fairly normally regulated and they have kind of like, they're not super secure, but they're not super anxious. You date enough people like this, you could develop anxious tendencies because you're just so freaked out, right?
This, I have to be honest, Susan, and I'm wondering if you've ever gone through a variation of this in your life before, but like I can tell you from my own experience, I've been through many tough things. This was, bar none, the most emotionally painful thing I have ever gone through in my life. And I've been with clients who've often said to me, I dated a narcissist. Now, the narcissist was cruel, and I could understand the pattern once I got my head around it. And what they did during the relationship, wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. But when I was discarded by my avoidant partner, who I thought was the sweetest human being on the planet, they made me feel seen, heard, and understood unlike any other person I'd ever met, only for them one day to just cut and run. I was sent to a place of hell that I have never thought I would ever feel in my life, and it took me months, years to get over it.
Oh, my God. And do they make contact with you again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not always, but a lot of them do. Because usually, so the cycle usually goes, they, like for the avoidant attachment in a relationship, and again, I'm simplifying it, they get close to you, intimacy builds, their fear grows, and they're not usually communicating that they're getting scared and they're freaking out. So a lot of this stuff when they present it is really new information for you. Yeah. So what happens is they're going into flight as part of the trauma responses of fight, flight, freeze, fawn. And then eventually they get to, what might usually happen is they get to a state where they get to freeze and they freak out and they're like, I need to get out of here because something's not right, something's not working out for me. There are variations of this. And what will happen is they'll feel hopeless, they'll feel depressed, they might even feel sick, and they'll blame it on the relationship for making it feel this way.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's because they're just like filled up with so much anxiety. And what will then happen is if and when they break up from the relationship, which sometimes may have been a premeditated breakup, like for a lot of them, they may have been stewing on this for a while as a way of relieving their anxiety, but they've just been sitting on their own ticking time bomb and waiting for this to go off. And then when they do break up, they often feel tremendous relief off the back of it. They're like, thank God, like I'm out, bye, don't want to see that person again. It was clearly my partner who made me feel this way. But here's the kicker. Once they come down from freeze and go back into a more semi-regulated nervous system, that's when the regret hits them like a freight train. Mm. And you've talked about this too. You've talked about dumper's remorse, I think you call
yeah.
it, where,
yeah.
the, yeah, where the dumper feels remorse over their actions.
Yeah.
This is absolutely typical for the avoidant attacher because after they go through relief, they then feel so much guilt and shame over their actions. And this is where we'll see them do one of a few things. They'll either bury their head in work, they'll monkey branch and get with someone new, and that new person may look exactly like the previous person they dated. It may look like a downgrade from the person they dated. Or they may circle back around to their ex who they just dumped with all manner of apology, or they'll do the lame, hey, how are you text message on yeah. social media. Because this is their way of seeing if they can get back in. But there's often a lot of fear, guilt, and shame for these individuals that guide a lot of their actions at this particular stage. So short answer, yeah.
Ken, do we have any idea what percentage of the population this covers between dismissive and fearful? What are your chances when you go out there and roll the dice on a dating app, you know?
Well, that's the funny thing is that even though the research would say, like from books like Attached, they say it's like the dismissives are 20% of the population, the fearfuls are 5%. I beg to differ. I'm like, well, firstly, where did we get such round numbers from? Secondly, where was this? Like, we also got to think about user bias as well. But putting like my thoughts about those contentious statistics, huge number. Like, I mean, I reckon it's a huge number, and I'm not saying that out of paranoia. I'm saying that as just like, if you think about it, yeah. And the attachment expert would say, okay, well, if you're secure, most of you should have paired up by now and you're out of the dating pool. Everyone who's insecure is left to mingle around with one another. And because avoidant attachers are deeply, deeply, deeply thirsty for connection, they're on dating apps. They want to connect with people. They absolutely want it. But when they get it, it's like having an allergic reaction. So they freak out. So, you know, I'm afraid to say that if you're on dating apps, particularly, the ease and convenience of them make it a avoidant attachers playground, especially if they're not working on themselves.
So let's say you are reeling from a sudden breakup. You know, my first step is always, I advise people to at least find some reason why, just to put your head like in a, just to begin to sort it out. And is it enough to say they broke up with me because they're a dismissive or a fearful avoidant? Do you think that works in the healing process of a person to understand that?
Here's what I think. I think merely saying they're avoidant doesn't really take the pain away, as I'm sure you'd appreciate. Like, I mean, God, do you know how, like, I mean, I'm sure you appreciate this because I can speak from my own experience. We have so much guilt and shame over these experiences wherein we're the dumpy. We often feel like, oh my God, if I was less needy, maybe this could have worked out. Oh, if I was pretty. Right.
If I'd asked for less in what I wanted as a relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we often, and like, even if we're looking at it on paper, you know, you read it out like letters yourself. Like when you're reading out the letters, you might be looking at this going, why the hell are you feeling bad about this person? They clearly just didn't seem like they're material for you. But unfortunately, our emotional side gets the better of us. And, you know, our heart, it's a fickle thing. And it's often like, no, that's the person I want. I really want that person in spite of all the logical evidence that this person likely does have a fear of intimacy and commitment. So usually what I find works for people is if you've had a sudden breakup, to me, that raises huge alarm bells in my head because I sort of think, okay, if this person truly, truly, truly didn't like you and didn't care for you, which does happen, it is a thing, I've gone through it myself, you would have probably felt that there was an absence of, you know, romantic connection there because we as human beings are actually pretty intuitive. At times we just get in our own way. So I agree with that. But if you felt like this person was doing, for the most part, everything right. Hell, their actions match their words for a large part of it. Right. You really felt there was a connection there. But right. Then there was that sudden shift in the energy. That's when I'd be like, I think we're looking at a particular pattern here. And that pattern is consistent with avoidant attachment. I'd get psychoeducated on that to see if this resonates for you. I would, if it lands for you, fantastic, because that'll definitely get your brain across this. But then there's so much more work that people need to often do because honestly, even if it was an avoidant who broke up with you out of nowhere, if you're in that much pain, usually there's more to it than the person who broke up with you. There's usually a lot of stacked grief and betrayal that might still be lingering here that needs to come out of your system. So unfortunately, merely calling someone avoidant, hell, even calling them a narcissist, it's not enough.
So people would want to know, is there a way that I can identify if they might be from the very beginning when I start dating them?
There are ways, but I have to be honest, a lot of it comes with practice. Like for me now, I'm like, I can spot this kind of person a mile away. Hell, I reckon Susan, I reckon you would too. Like you've been enough dates for now to be like, I can spot this person.
Like it's pattern recognition. Really, you go through so much of it. And you're like, oh yeah, I've seen that. I've heard this. I've heard that. Yep. So because people always ask me like I have some magic bullet that I've been withholding from them. Like if you do this, you'll never be hurt. If you do this, you'll know if they're lying. That's why I was asking for the tells, you know, because players have really clear tells, I think. And the only way I could educate myself is I had to put myself on a six year course of dating them. And I'm a relationship girl. I had like really low single digit numbers. And I was already in my, God, late 40s, maybe 50 at that point. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of guys in my life at all. And I had to like suddenly figure out what this stuff is, because I was absolutely blown away by it. And then I was fascinated by it. And then I became my own lab rat, you know, because there's no way to know till you go through it. How are you going to tell somebody, like Ken, look at your lived experience. How are you going to tell somebody this if it's theory? It doesn't play. You know every move they're going to make. You know the next move. You know they're going to say this. Then when they do that, they did it because of this and they were trying to do that. It's just, I think, I don't know. Is this also the preemptive dump? This is the preemptive dump that I used to talk about too, right? That they know they're going to feel this. So yeah, what do you have? Like a 30% shot of maybe finding somebody healthy out there? What do we know?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the cynical part of me. But you know what I also think too, Susan? I'm an eternal optimist. I sort of think, yeah, but, you know, the more we're becoming aware of this, like if, okay, I'm going to get a bit woo on us for a little minute. If the general collective is we've got an outrageous mass of people with insecure attachment and we're leaning a little too heavily on the avoidance side, we've got to course correct somewhere, right?
Yes.
So yeah. I sort of think with enough of us going through this experience and actually learning from this too, hey, I don't love it, but I've got to tell you, in the world of healing, we don't skip steps here. You know, we're probably going to get to a stage eventually where we're like, okay, we've gone, the pendulum has truly gone way too far in the emotionally unavailable territory. We need to bring it back the other way. So, you know, the more times I think we go through these experiences, the more I think we're, for want of a better phrase, leveling up, becoming more attuned to our emotional needs, what we need from other people. Hell, there's probably some great avoidant attachers that are recovering from their own stuff. It'd make fabulous partners as well too. So, you know, generally I think it kind of speaks to a thing what you've also shared in a lot of your videos, which is this idea of, you know, we're healing and I think joining a different collective of people now who are just not necessarily the same as what we once were. Like, I mean, I'm completely honest, a lot of this is just like addiction recovery. You once hung around with a lot of fellow addicts, well, they're probably not the kind of company you want to hold on to much more.
You know, I do believe that with the breakup of the traditional safety net of having relationship, long-term committed monogamous relationships, when the millennials broke that up so that we could reconfigure it to a more authentic a la carte as to what we can do, unfortunately, the infrastructure to replace that was not put in adequately. So we have people grasping at different ways to manage their own needs. And I think I'm also optimistic too, that I have to tell you, most all of my clients that I've worked with, even the people that followed me on YouTube for the last 10 years, almost all of them are in loving, committed relationships now. They watch, they come in once in a while, but they found it and they had to go through their own educational journey. And also, if you want to get a little woo, I'm East Coast woo, not West Coast woo, but you know, sometimes the exact thing that we need to understand will come into our life to activate us for our own evolution. And perhaps for me, over-giver, over-nurturer, giving away power, giving away love. Oh, I can help you become the man you want to be. I've got the resources and support and advice to help you. And all these things that I've done, thinking that it was the greatest form of love, I look back on and like, boy, you really disabled them and kicked yourself in the pants because you didn't even focus on yourself for 40 years. Now you've got a few years left in the sandal, you're kicking it as hard as you can 7 days a week. So what's up with that? So it's taken all of us a little bit of time to adjust. But what I love about you, first of all, I have to tell my audience this. When I first met you, you actually got a session. And it was more to talk business, but I thought that was the classiest move I have ever had because it was so respectful of my time. And I never forgot it because people hound me all the time to help them, fix them, heal them, bring them, give them, connect them. And you did it so marvelously. And it was such a joy for me to meet somebody of your ethical standards. So I just have to thank you for that.
No, well, thank you very much, because that's warmly received. And, you know, often people come to me saying, you know, you've really helped save my life in what I'm doing. And I can only throw that back to you, because you saved me from the pit of my mental, you know, insanity when I was going through this, because I wanted to connect with you, and I really resonated with everything you were saying. And if I'm completely honest, I found traditional therapy, even the work on attachment theory, was failing me and a lot of people, because they made it seem so simple as 1, 2, 3. If you're dating an avoidant, give them space, be more understanding, just understand, they need more time. And it's like, oh, shut the fuck up. Like, I mean, a lot of us, with all due respect, as you've said, have been overgiving and fawning. Like, the term I use is fawning. Like, it's this idea of, like, because I've done this too, and I mean, I'm recovering from this as well. Like, don't get me wrong, like, that'll work if you're with a partner who's wanting to work on their attachment style. I get that. But frankly, you know, I'm fed up with being a giver. I'm fed up with, you know, being someone who's overly empathetic with everyone. I'm much more boundary now. Like, I love, but I think that, you know, with connecting with you, like, it was really this thing of just like reciprocity, where I was like, no. I respect your time. I respect your energy. And I got a lot of value out of that, you know, session alone. And I have to say, you know, it really gave me a lot of courage to do more of this sort of stuff, and also to trust my intuition. Cause I think, how many of us have our intuition disabled with the rhetoric we have in dating and relationships, yeah, which is, and we discussed this privately as well too. God forbid. The reason I love you is because I feel like you talk sense, but like, I mean, God, the number of dating coaches who I want to tear my hair out with as well too. Like, it's
me too.
Just
me too. I'm ashamed to say the field I'm in because of so many of the other people. They look at me like an idiot. Like, you could have served. Why didn't you like go try and heal cancer? It's like, well, I found myself here. But you know, I agree. I totally agree, because it's the same churn of the same stuff we've heard, and it doesn't fix, it doesn't heal, it doesn't illuminate, it doesn't empower, you know?
No. And do you know what I loved about what you said earlier was, you know, we all have to sort of go through this, and maybe there's something that comes out of these experiences to teach us something. I truly believe that. Like, I mean, did I know I was going to be talking about avoidant attachment on the internet? Hell no. I will be honest. Like, when I saw you and what you did, I was bloody inspired. And I thought, maybe I want to do that. I didn't think it was going to go in this direction, but the will of the universe is a funny thing. But like, I do remember, you know, thinking back to my experience with my avoidant ex, and I got to tell you, I am so grateful for that experience, because, yeah, it was hell, but God, I'm a different human being off the back of that, and it's served me exceptionally well individually and with my relationships as a whole, and I really think there truly is life before that incident and life after. And that's probably what you've been through too when you were, you know, out of New York.
I've learned that when they crucify you and kill you, you actually rise from the ashes. But nobody told me that while I was being burned to death, you know, because I didn't have internet. I didn't even have friends. I mean, for God's sake. But, you know, Ken, were you in this profession before this breakup, or did it catalyze your hunger? Now, the same thing happened with me. I found my calling through being crucified by a community. But nobody tells you when you're going through this shit that this is your actual, you're now stepping into your soul purpose. Nobody tells you that you're being given the greatest gift if you can survive it. But this part they don't tell you. And I think the reason they don't tell you is because it would be easier if we went through it, and maybe it wouldn't have as profound an effect. I don't know. And now I'm sharing it, so I don't want to blow that torment for anybody else. But if you're being tortured, it's a good thing, right? But because... we share clients, right? And even with Barbara, she's like, oh my God, I love Ken. Oh my God. You know, and I see Zen Maiden is with you. I see all of my people, because they're trying to understand what happened to them. And now you've made me a convert. Now I have to admit that it's not BS, only because of you. If anybody else had told me, I'd say, No, because it's you. And I know it's real. Oh gosh. You know, so yeah, it's an update for me. I'm just so thrilled to have you on because this is so torturous for people that go through it and they blame themselves. When you have a sudden breakup, you keep thinking there's something you missed, something you didn't do, something you could have done differently. Worse yet, because there was no conversation and there was just this slow evacuation, like a pulling back and then boom, you keep wondering what if. All these things that were unanswered, and then they don't get answered. You don't have resolution, and people stay stuck. And maybe if they can understand the pattern, that this is what this person does, we can now label it. It's not about you, but be conscious that maybe you have to adjust on your end. If I have this like very, very, very scientific method I call the teeter-totter theory. And it's like, when somebody shifts, you have to shift too. And when you shift, if you shift your position, they might just get knocked off the teeter-totter if they're not supposed to be there. If they're not, but it's you have to shift your position too. So for somebody who has experienced this, what is your best advice for them moving forward, looking at potential partners as they begin to make their selection process? What are the things they should look out for?
Great question. I'm actually going to pluck an anecdote from you. Do you remember the story you often share with clients about the time you were in Australia and Elvis Lane reached out to you?
Oh, he had everything. He was a rapid cycling, hypermanic depressive who was also paranoid schizophrenic. The guy had the whole buffet table of diagnoses. When I pulled away, when my energy here was no longer spent every day thinking about him, wanting him, even if there weren't actions taken to follow, to look on social media. When I actually had a moment of living life in the present moment, that's when they called. That's when the contact was made.
Yeah. Even though we don't have like an official, I suppose, name for this phenomenon, I would say it's very much a thing. Like, you know, I think that the biggest triage, if you will, which is going to sound very, I think, consistent with what you would tell people, I think the best thing you can do is one, get educated on this. Two, you know, work on being actually very gentle with yourself. It's okay to still love this person. It's okay to still miss them. You know, this was someone significant in your life. It's okay. You know, you're allowed to feel what you feel with this. Usually there's a bit of a biting inner critic, which is wanting to tell you, well, if you had done this, they would have done X, Y, Z. Right. If only you had done this, maybe things would be different. Or clearly they just weren't that into you. You're just delusional. You need to challenge that inner critic because that stuff is not helping anyone out. And then I would say, and this is something you've said before, and it's absolutely vital, and it connects to the anecdote, get mobilizing on your life. Prioritize you. Do things that you've been putting on the sideline for quite some time. Get some agency back with your life, because the minute you allow yourself to work on your emotional side, work on your life, you'll actually see a lot of momentum off the back of this too. And dare I say, this person probably will come back around. Now, for some, that'll be a sigh. That'll be like a big hooray moment for a lot of people. Okay, no judgment there. But I got to tell you that unless this person has been to therapy and worked on their fear of intimacy, it is not going to change. I don't know about you, Susan, but I can tell you now, I have yet to hear a successful second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, millionth time with someone who's boomeranged back with this particular situation. In fact, I would actually, this is a question I'm meaning to ask you. You call, you have the name of like players. I'm wondering, you know, how would you describe the players? Because I'm very curious to see if this is a match. So how would you describe players for people who are just listening?
Oh, I had to hunt for them. Well, I picked guys that were clearly half my age. Really slick, really charismatic, had all the lines, had all the swagger. It's like they had the invisible t-shirt that said, I'm good for one night, babe, don't expect any more. They were just too slick, too hot. They were clearly identifiable as the wild horse that had no capacity for a loving, committed relationship. Like the 23, 24, 26, remember, I'm 48 to 53 at this point. So, I mean, I got zero abilities except here. Oh, they were already attracted to me, right? So I just thought, okay, I'm going to do my best. But I, for me, ethically, I had to make sure that they weren't, in my life experiment, I had to make sure that I couldn't activate an open heart. I don't want to do you damage. I'll take the hit to learn, but I so at any rate, but they were players in the sense that the vibe was just, they're too good at the game. Guys that are nervous when they do approach, they've got a lot at stake. You know, a guy who's fumbling in bed the first night, girls are like, oh my God, he's no good. No, he actually wants to impress you. He's scared shitless that he's not going to be good enough. So you don't want the guy that's so comfortable, so practiced with his lines, because he's practiced with his lines, and it's you and many others. And I also found that they were the easiest. They were the most scared of falling in love, but I didn't have a word for it. And I found that they pushed it. Okay, so this is how it felt. They pushed it away and made me feel like I was wrong and that I was delusional when I would call them out and say, now, I think you're the one who's more afraid of me than I am of you. I'll never forget the one guy who was such a great part of my life. He said, damn it, Susan, why can't you just be a dumb blonde and be the way you look, for God's sake? And I said, because you would have been done with me the first night. I was number 123 on your roster. You're only 23 at the time. You had 100. You were counting, right? And so I just know that with players, there is no, they're just too good at the game. It's too perfect. Everything is executed. Everything, every move has elegance. It's not a normal person. It's a little, got a little bit of, you know, fear, right? Is that how it felt for you?
Yeah. So for me, yes to everything you said. I think there's a lot of impression management. Okay, I'll tell you what sets me off, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know what I'm in for. There's a lot of what I call intellectual chemistry. Like, you feel like you're bouncing off back each other. Like, it's like the conversation's great, but it doesn't quite get emotionally deep. It's almost like if you want to talk about previous partners, they'll give you the cliff notes. Oh, my last ex, they were crazy. Or, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, getting over a past relationship, they're like, oh yeah, that was like 6 months ago. I moved on. I'm much better now. And it's almost like, are you really though? And, you know, you may find yourself very highly entertained by these people. They'll tell you, oh, I just want to go with the flow. I'm not looking for anything serious right now. Or if they say they're looking for something serious, that's lovely. But you may find that when you try asking them critical information about themselves, about their past love life, they really fall short at being able to identify accountability. They really fall short at giving you a lot of color to their emotional language. It's all very much just like fun and games. How can we keep the fun going? Rather than how can we build an emotional connection with each other? And I often find a key thing here is there's a lot of intensity. And I get worried when there's intensity because I think you don't even know me. And more importantly, if you're this intense, what is driving that? Like, you know, you're gonna start, I start thinking to myself, like, I know that I'm special, but I don't think you know that just yet. So, you know, what is really, you know, motivating you to be just like, oh my God, like, you're amazing. I'm like, you need to calm the hell down because this is a bit scary for me. So I don't know if any of those sort of signs align with your experience with players, but for me, it's always just this feeling I get where I can feel it. And I'm like, oh yeah, that person's avoidant. Like, cause it's just, it's in the energy, and that's the stuff you pick up just over time.
So players are mostly avoidants, correct?
I would say yes. There are some anxiously attached players out there too. And frankly, they can be quite clumsy. They're often following like the Neil Strauss verbiage.
Pickup artist. I knew one of the original guys there. And that's so funny because he's even listed in Neil Strauss's book. And he called me to ask me what he could do because he played game, caught a girl, and really started to like her. And I said, game gets game and real gets real. And I said, you can't change that. I said, she's not attracted to the real you. God forbid a pickup artist ever reveal his emotions. If you've come onto that game, that girl is not prepared to be attracted to the real you. She doesn't want to see your vulnerable side. She doesn't want to see you cry. She doesn't want to hear your problems. She's turned on by the fact that she gets to capture you. She's uncertain whether you're going to come back, and she got to win you back again. So she's in a whole game all with her own self-esteem, I think.
And that's what you just described there is classic avoidance sort of stuff too, because it's that whole idea of like, I want to control the intimacy between us, right?
So, so the girl's avoidant. Yeah. So the girls that chase the wild horses, the girls that chase the players are equally avoidant, correct?
They can be, yeah. Because if you think about it, right, it's all about the intensity. It's about controlling the intimacy. It's about, you know, and you would have seen this with male clients as well too. It's all about like, you know, how can I maintain my aloofness whilst not getting too close to this person as well too? You know, it's funny you brought up Neil Strauss, because he himself is an admitted avoidant attacher. And I mean, God, he's had everything. Sex addiction, depression, anxiety.
He's married. Works. Married now.
Is he married now?
I think he's married and is a whole different guy. And my guy, who was one of the original guys, not only married a woman, was in San Diego for a while, went off grid. Like the guy is in the most northern part of California with his family, kind of like eco-friendly. I mean, it's just like these guys, I know a lot of the original pickup artists, and they've moved into committed relationships.
Yeah, but Neil had a pretty gnarly experience, because originally when he was with Ingrid, I think is her name, and then that relationship just didn't work out, and he went through Sex Addicts Anonymous, and then he would go on to date someone who was like mega avoidant, and that was his rock bottom moment. And then he got back together with Ingrid, and that lasted for 5 years. So I don't know what's going on now with him, but regardless, I know a few other pickup artists as well, and to confirm what you said, I've heard the same thing as well too. A lot of them had to unlearn a lot of that behavior, because it was all about control of intimacy, and it was masking so many insecurities.
So I remember what I thought was the best 4-hour date ever, because I knew this guy, and I'm not going to say his name, but he's one of the original in the house in Hollywood. He's listed in the book. And I knew it wasn't a romantic date, but he asked me to dinner. We went to Ernie's on the Upper West Side, which was on 76th and Broadway. And he started talking about one of my favorite topics. And I'm like, oh, God, if guys knew this about women, like, all you have to say to her is, no matter when you dump her, how many times, go, oh, my God, I went out there. I looked. There's no one like you. There's no one. I had no idea. And the girl will go, of course, you know. And I was giving him a 4-hour lecture to how to crack the code of female minds. Then he writes me, you know, like a couple months later saying, you won't believe where I am. I can't really talk about it. I'll let you know when I'm back in New York briefly. And I'm like, did I hand over valuable information in that 4 hours? They were going to do it anyway, because they were using NLP and all this stuff and the negging. And then I dated a guy reluctantly. I call him an accidental boyfriend. I didn't really mean to date him, but I ended up dating him because it was the tail end of my players. He had taken one of the many incarnations, because there were all different groups that grew out of that original thing, and they all had their boot camps, and they were making a fortune, $1,500 an hour, taking guys on field trips so they could do day game, night game. And the first time I sat down to talk to him, he put his hand on my inner thigh. And I looked at him and I said, what are you doing? Yeah, I wasn't that shocked. I was just more looking at it. I said, does that work for you? Like, has that actually worked in the past? And he looked at me and I said, well, you know, thank you. I go out with guys and it's later that I figure out that they were interested in a date, because I don't know. My friends are saying, is it a date? It's not a date. So at least I know what your intentions are. But I used to just attack him mercilessly on his game. And he would come back and tell me all the gals that he goes, I broke into a twosome or something like that. I broke into a two set. Meaning he got two girls and he talked to both of them. And he was a PhD student in mathematics. So he was like, you know, they didn't have game. So I understand verbal finesse in making contact. And communication is exceedingly good. And I understand trying to find commonality and a good opening line when you're not a gorgeous looking guy that breaks into a group of women. And I think that training is great. But there are healthier ways to do it now. But the original pickup artists, I believe that architecturally, the pickup artists in the early 2000s set off a bunch of women who decided they got burned so many times, they're like, I'm not going to feel anything. And I'm going to become a man and have sex with you like you have sex with me. So the women closed their hearts. Now the guys are like, oh my God, I can't find a woman who loves me. So they became even more freaked out. Now the women are like, wait, I thought I'd be married and have kids by now. There's a guy that won't even approach me. So we got this whole mess. But then we're here, Ken. So all is good.
Yeah, I mean, I just think a lot of this has a funny way of working its way out for a lot of us as well, too. Like, if we're open to it, I just think, you know, and look, I actually have to say, a lot of those pickup artists, I think it's a really fascinating, you know, insight into, like, what's going on behind the scenes, the evolution of how they transform their insecurities into more security. Like, I mean, I actually think I'm actually very grateful for their contribution to this. And I know it's, you know, not necessarily, it's not everyone's thing, and I know that it's also caused a lot of broken hearts and hurt, which I respect and I get. And, you know, at the same time, I just think, well, we've got to make do with what we've got, right? So good for them. And I think having met a lot of men in particular who had a lot of raging insecurities, I can see how it's been a marvelous tool for overcoming some of those insecurities. But as you said, there are better ways that also aid your self-esteem to get that which you want without, you know, resorting to, frankly, emotionally manipulative tactics.
Yes, the communication technology, and I think the underlying thread of speaking to her like a human being rather than coming on to her right away was helpful training for a lot of these guys. They were so insecure, couldn't even look at a girl in the eye. But Ken, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I want to have another interview with you if you have time before I leave Arizona and the great lighting, because God, I look like a jail mugshot when I'm back in New York. But I just think you're so helpful, and you have illuminated for me something very important, because I don't want to mislead any of my clients, you know, and it's so helpful that I can now begin to frame some of my conversations with a little bit better understanding of what the verbiage may be. So where would you, I will have all of your links in the description, but where would you prefer that people begin to start to watch your work?
Feel free to come to me on Instagram at ken.reed.co, I think is what it is. Yeah, ken.reed.co. I'm sure you've got it, so I'm confident that one way or another, it'll be accurate. But yeah, I'm having fun on Instagram talking about this, because just like you said, it's, you know, even if we've had different names for it all this time, fascinating stuff.
And your podcast is great. I started to listen to that, Ken Reed's. And I think you've got a really good business model. If you pick their individual question, there's a nominal charge, and the whole show is about them. It's really brilliant. That's a very smart idea. And you have other counselors that work under your banner, correct? So somebody can always be reached. You're in Australia. We have Americans here in timelines that would work, or time zones that would work better for the US, which is also, you built an incredible machine that's very smart. Ken, I thank you so much, firstly, for your warmth, your intelligence, your hard work, your friendship, and your wise words in helping people. You've really taken a situation and alchemized it to the absolute best for everyone involved, yourself included. So I hope you will come back to my new show where I get to interview the brightest minds in the world.
Hell yeah. I mean, honestly, this is, like I said, you know, not only a full circle moment for me, but also, I gotta tell you, I was super excited when you offered me this invitation. I was like, hell yeah, I get to chat with Susan for a bit about something that I love talking about. Absolutely, I'm gonna jump on that too. I will say, just PS, if anyone's, you know, ever watched Sex and the City, you know, Big is classic avoidant attacher. So if that's your, like, if that's just my little quick last minute thing to just say, If you're ever struggling, refer back to Sex and the City because it covers a lot of the attachment insecurity beautifully.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Ken, I have a healthy attachment with you. Is that okay?
Oh, hell yeah. I've got a healthy attachment with you too, Susan. We got chemistry. We got connection. You know, we may have some unfortunate differences in terms of, you know, other forms of compatibility. But I tell you what, where it counts, it matters, and we're good friends.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this show for the big, big, big Susan Winter update about I Believe in Attachment Theory because I believe in Ken Reed. Thank you all. We'll see you on another show. Ken, thanks so much. You're the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.